But as promised, it's time to go out to the phone and welcome in one of our favorites, Casey Jacobson, college basketball analyst, Pac-12 Networks and Fox Sports. He is calling tonight's Arizona-Washington game. And, you know, Washington, one of the stories, 3-0 early. But I want to zero in on you because this is, after all, it's all about you, this segment, Casey. Welcome.
All right, great.
So, game day. I'm imagining that right up until tip time, it's almost like a typical game day. You still have those reactions like a player, don't you? I imagine when you're getting ready to call a game, and I know how you prep, and I know how you love and respect the game of basketball. So it's almost like a game day when you play it, or not?
It is. Not physically.
Nothing physically? You don't get a twitch? Your wrist doesn't start to fire away or any of that?
No, no. Physically, it's not like I'm preparing my body to play at a high level. You know, I drink a lot of water, right? Physically, I'm trying to prepare my voice so it's nice and sexy when I speak on air.
Yep.
But to your point, it is. I still feel like I'm performing in the game, and so there is that nervousness and anxiety to get the game going. And of course, it's live television, so whatever I say, it's out there, so I want to make sure that it's good stuff. So yeah, when I wear an earpiece, and when my producer says, "All right, guys, we're live in 10," and he counts down 10, 9, 8, yeah, my butterflies start going a little bit, and then once the ball is tipped, though, just like when I was a player, once the ball tipped, we're just in the flow. We're doing
right. Right, and it's, I'm sure you've gotten past that early stage of TV when it was all new to you, and there's all these things coming at you, and people talking in your ear while you're talking. What's that about? I mean, you're past that, right? I mean, now you're a pro. You do this all the time.
Yeah, well, I'll never forget my first game. It was last year, Wofford against Stanford for Pac-12 Network. And I've wanted to broadcast for a long time, and I was finally there my first game. I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, so for that, I was like, I was nervous. But I had much more reason to be nervous than I do now because I didn't know how it goes. Yeah, and so when your producer talks in your ear while you are talking, your natural inclination is to stop talking. You can't do that on TV. There's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that the audience may not know about. But, yeah, try talking and putting together thoughts while somebody's trying to talk in your ear. It's a lot more difficult than it sounds.
It is, and it still gets me sometimes. I mean, when I think Trevor sometimes gets in my ear and just starts humming, or he starts counting backwards from 100 just to see how I'll handle it. But it does sort of, you pause to get your thoughts so you battle that thought, even though you're processing what they're telling you. I know it's an acquired skill, and you obviously have nailed it. So, tonight, what do the Utes have to be concerned with Oregon coming in? I mean, you know, at least they're back, and as Coach Krystowiak said in his press conference Monday when he wasn't addressing the BYU situation, he talked about how great it was to open up with 3 on the road because last year they played at home, and the students weren't around, and it's a different Huntsman Center. Now the students are back. First week of school, nobody's going to class. I promise you, it's that first week back, right? So they're going to be all fired up, and so they'll be a true home court tonight.
Yeah, you know, Utah, so I'm in Tucson right now as I speak, because I'm covering the game Washington at Arizona, and Utah's in the same boat as Arizona. Their students just got back, like you mentioned, and Utah and Arizona, to me, have the best home court advantages in the Pac-12. And so, yes, both of those teams had to go out on the road and start, you know, three consecutive road games in conference play, but both of those teams now get to go home. They're the two biggest arenas in the entire country. So the Huntsman Center, 15,000, the most in the Pac-12. So both of these teams now get a chance to really, you know, put their best foot forward in front of their home crowd. But you asked me about Oregon. Oregon is a very interesting team. I think they will compete with Utah and Arizona for the Pac-12 championship, which is basically wide open now.
Yeah.
Especially with the injury to Alonzo Trier, Arizona's leading scorer. But Oregon is a really aggressive team, TK, that relies on pressure defense. So the key for me, for the Utes, is can they handle the pressure? Can they keep their turnovers down and get open shots? Because if you break the Oregon press, they play a lot of zone as well. If you can get the ball into the middle of their zone, they're not that great defensively once you can get it into the middle.
So they want to speed you up, right? They want tempo in their hat. They want you to be breaking the press and then shooting quickly, and then that's fine with them.
Yeah, they want to. They're going to mix up pressure, full court, some three-quarter court. Then they're going to drop back into a 2-3, like kind of a matching zone. Sometimes they'll trap out of that in the half court. They want to create turnovers, and they're one of the best in the conference at doing that. I believe they're second in the entire conference in creating turnovers and havoc. So, yeah, that's what they want to do. That's how they play.
So this is a different kind of up-in-your-face defense than the Utes faced at Wichita State. That's more of a man, and they were bodying him and bumping him and maybe more physical, and this is just more frenetic pace?
Yeah, the Wichita State game, they took Utah guards, perimeter play, out, and they were picking up it. Wichita State played passing lanes. They played strictly man-to-man defense. And Oregon will play some man, but it's going to be mostly zone that has some man-to-man principles. They're also, the other thing I want to mention about Oregon, TK, they're very athletic, especially blocking shots at the rim. They got Chris Boucher, super skinny, but one of the best shot blockers in the conference. And then Jordan Bell, who last year set a school record at Oregon for most shot blocks in a season. He's now a sophomore and continuing to do much of the same. So even when you do break their pressure, you can't just go up softly at the rim. They're going to throw that stuff back into the second row.
So is there a ball fake drill, or is that something that Coach Krystowiak would be suggesting to the guys when you get there, if your feet are set, you know, a little ball fake and see if you can draw some contact? Or like for Pirtle, you're going to just tell him to just dunk on him?
Yeah, there's several ways to attack shot blockers. One, if you're 7 feet, just dunk the ball. If you're not 7 feet, you can drive right at their chest and the way that they're calling it, put pressure on the officials to make that call. And then the third would be, yeah, if you're under control, then you can use shot fake and use the defense's momentum against them and get to the foul line.
So if you're looking at the Utes now, and it would seem that this is a game where they're, you know, he's kind of done a point guard by committee with Bonham and with Brandon and Isaiah off the bench. And is this a game when that point guard, the lack of a true traditional point guard, the Utes would feel it a little bit, a guy who can set them up and sort of dictate, and now you're counting on multiple guys?
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, I love the way that Lorenzo Bonham
Me too.
Has grown this year. I mean, the game that I called against Colorado, they don't win that game.
No, he was huge.
He was amazing. But yeah, when you play against a team like Oregon, when you play against a team like Washington, who kind of plays similar, where they want to speed you up, a lot of press, it would help if you had a DeLon Wright that says, give me the ball and just get out of the way. Obviously, he's not here. So you have to do it by committee. Now, Brandon Taylor's been in big game situations, NCAA tournament situations before. However, in most of those instances, and I watched a lot of film on Utah from last year, in most of those instances, Brandon Taylor deferred to DeLon Wright. He was like the security blanket for Brandon. And now it's on him and Lorenzo and some of the other guards, Isaiah Wright in the backcourt, to do it. It's not just going to be one guy. It's got to be multiple guys. And how about when you're playing against Oregon, you also need your forwards, a guy like Kyle Kuzma or yep. Rekot Chapman, to flash into the middle of that zone pressure. You know, maybe those guys flash to the middle, maybe where like the half-court jump ball area. If those guys can get the ball and then attack and make plays, then you can really hurt Oregon.
So is it better then to have the wing guys come up to the middle to attack rather than Pirtle, because then you're sort of taking away Pirtle's strength? I mean, if he's at the top of the key, he's a great passer and he can handle a little bit, but you want him sort of in a position that the defense has to react to him. And then if it's Kuzma or Brakat or whoever in the middle breaking that press, that's kind of how Coach Krystowiak would want that set up.
Yeah, you don't want Jakob Pirtle anywhere near the press. You want him behind, and that's where, you know, I just mentioned Brakat Chapman and Kyle Kuzma. There's not a lot of teams in the Pac-12 that have playmaking forwards. Now, Utah does, so they can utilize that. But if teams don't, to your point, TK, if you don't have playmaking forwards, you got to get your forwards out of there, and then you utilize your guards. Maybe you have your point guard inbound the ball and then get into the middle and be that playmaker to break pressure.
And then for Coach Krystowiak, one more thought about the Oregon defensive philosophy. Do you, if you're Coach K, do you break it in attack, or do you break it and you want to still keep tempo and you want to make them defend, so you break it and then you go to your sets on, to attack that matchup zone? Or I guess it's a judgment. If you have the advantage, you take it.
Yeah, it is. And that's a difficult question for me to answer, because it depends on the time, the score,
right,
the situation, how many numbers you have. But a general rule, when you're playing against pressure and you get it to a playmaker, a guy who's comfortable and making decisions, you want him to be aggressive. You do. If that, even if it's a 2-on-2 or a 3-on-3 situation where there's open space, I would rather have my team be aggressive, because if you don't, what Oregon's going to do is they are going to pack the paint zone. They're going to take away Jakob Poeltl's post touches, and they're going to make you beat you from the outside, whereas you might be able to get layups and free throws if you attack and be aggressive.
Right, and that early offense, it is. I mean, that's the risk-reward of a pressure defense, is that, you know, you're going to give up 3-on-2 and 4-on-3s or 2-on-1s, and then if you're Utah, you want to, you know, you don't want to be wild about it, but you want to push that advantage. Okay. So coming up Sunday, here comes Oregon State. And just give us an idea. That's about the 180, the polar opposite of what the Ducks are going to do, right?
Yeah, well, Oregon State is a team that's not going to full court press a lot. They're a team that wants to grind it out in the half court.
Yep.
They play a ton of zone. But here, they have one of the most special, unique talents in all of college basketball, and Gary Payton II. And Oregon State played last night and lost to Colorado. And Gary Payton, he was basically all alone. Everybody else might as well have stayed in their hotel in Boulder, because Gary Payton had 26 points, 15 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals. TK, the rest of the starters for Oregon State combined for 6. I mean, he was basically on an island out there. Oregon State is a team that relies so heavily on what Gary Payton II does defensively. He is a monster. He's the head of their defensive snake. And they're a much better offensive team this year. However, their second, third, and fourth leading scorers are all freshmen. So what does that mean? They're going to be inconsistent. Yes, they're very talented, and in time and space, they can hurt you. But you never know with 18-year-olds on the road if they're going to be able to play. So when those freshmen go to the Huntsman Center, I have no idea what kind of effort they're going to have.
That's a great point. Okay, we're up against the clock a little bit. Casey Jacobson, our college basketball analyst, Pac-12 Networks and Fox Sports, calling Arizona and Washington tonight. Quickly, what is Washington doing well at 3-0?
Washington's one of the most unique teams in the country, not just Pac-12. And what I'll say is this, CK, they lead the Pac-12 in scoring per game, but they're the worst shooting team. Does that make any sense to you?
No.
That has never happened before in the Pac-12 conference. Going back to years and years and years, the reason why they're able to do that, they're the best offensive rebounding team. So even when they brick and they do it a ton, they go athletically, they go up and get it on the glass. And they're a great free throw shooting team. They get to the line a ton, especially Andrew Andrews. He's the leading scorer in the Pac-12, over 21 points a game. So because of those two things, they can still score a ton of points, even though they're not very good shooting the basketball.
And finally, I guess I got to ask you to weigh in on this. We've seen, you know, people all around the country weigh in about it. Jay Billis has said, well, it's, you know, if Udo doesn't want to play, that he gets that. Seth Davis yesterday of CBS said, you know, he didn't really understand why they wouldn't. I mean, there's difficulties in every rivalry. And I think I know, we talked about this, and I think, you know, you're feeling like I am. I understand it's Coach Krystowiak's right to write a check for $80,000, which I thought was an interesting backstory out of his own account. But you'd rather that they kept playing too. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer. Obviously we have to defer to the wants of the University of Utah.
I hate this decision. I hate it for the state of Utah. I know how much the rivalry means to the fans there. And yeah, that punch by Nick Emery was terrible. But how many times has that happened in the course of sports, in the course of, you know, history of rivalries? And just, you know, one poor decision shouldn't mar what's been an incredible rivalry. Only one game separates those two teams. That's pretty remarkable,
isn't it?
And the last thing I'll say is this, TK. I think Nick Emery should be the one that's suspended for next year's game. Remove him from the rivalry, and maybe there's something else. Maybe we can continue to play, because he was the one that lost his cool. So he was suspended one game in the regular season for BYU, but how about suspending him for the right to play against Utah the next year? Maybe that's all.
And there's an interesting interesting remedy, perhaps. Doubt that's going to happen, but it's worth chewing on a little bit. Again, great stuff. We could talk for another hour, but unfortunately, I have to let you go. Best of luck. Have a great call tonight. Arizona, Washington's going to be fun. You'll obviously have an eye on the Utes and the Ducks here. Casey Jacobson, thanks so much for joining us here on TK in the Midday here on ESPN 700 in Salt Lake City. Go have a great weekend as well. We will catch up with you soon.
Thanks, DK. See you next week.
Okay, sounds great. There he is, at CJacobson23. Got to follow him. Great insight around the country, too. He's obviously a basketball aficionado.